Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. All right, I went back to one of these websites that basically creates chat boards for people. And this particular website, again, I'm not going to tell you what website I'm looking at because I don't think it's really relevant. But what I find interesting is that people will post very serious questions with regards to real estate investing and what they should do when they hold real estate for investment and how they should maybe dispose of the asset. And some of those questions are pretty good. They really are. But some of the answers, oh my goodness. That's where the problem comes in. See, whereas these, I don't know what these chat boards, I still don't know really what to call these things. That's what they were called back when the internet first came out. You know, remember we had dial up and you had that when you had to connect. Yeah. And there was like a 30 to 60 second. Okay. I'm way off track. Let's get back on what I'm talking about. A person asked a very specific question. And what I'm going to do for you on today's show is I'm going to read to you the question so that you can understand what this person is inquiring about. Then I'm going to give you some of the responses that were given to this person. And to be honest with you, I think the people posting these responses, I think they genuinely think they're helping. But when they post information that's not all-inclusive or creates additional questions regarding why that particular advice should be considered sage advice, it's missing in content. The second and third order effects, they're not even brought up. They're not even discussed. So here's the question that caught my eye. An individual posted, selling my investment property to my tenant. Give me some advice. Okay, so what we know is that this individual, wherever they are in the United States, they own a piece of real estate. Most likely, this is a single family house. Now, it could be a townhome, it could be a condo. I mean, there's different variations on this. But as you'll find out, in this particular instance, it's a house because the first line of the email or the post goes like this. My tenant wants to buy my house. Okay, so we know that the tenant or the person residing in that property has made contact with the owner, the seller, the landlord, and said, you know, I'd be interested in buying the property. Let's get back to the post. He's pre-qualified for much more than what it's worth. So what he's saying is this person living in the house that's paying him rent every month has gone to a mortgage company or a credit union or a mortgage broker or wherever they have gone, and they have pre-qualified themselves, which should give this individual a good feeling that if he does enter into an agreement with the resident of his property, that person or that family has the ability to perform on whatever business relationship they make with regards to the sale. Makes sense, right? Okay, so let's get back into this because here's where it gets a little strange. However, he doesn't have much more than 5% for the down payment. Okay, why does that matter? Apparently, the person writing this doesn't understand that there are mortgage programs out there that allow somebody who wants to be an owner-occupant to put as little as no money down. This is true. If this person's resident just happens to be a veteran, and they're pre-qualified for more than what the house is worth, that tells me that this person can perform on a sale. They can buy the property. And it doesn't matter to the seller whether or not the resident puts 0% down for a VA, or let's say they're, you know, just a typical American. They're not a veteran. Well, the FHA provides for loan programs that start at 3.5% down. And not to dismiss the commercial markets, but there are commercial lenders out there and loan brokers out there that can assist a first-time home buyer with buying with a conventional loan, and they can put as little as 5% down. Yeah, and the way those things work is usually you take out a first mortgage for 80% loan to value, and then you'll take out maybe a second mortgage for the additional 15%. That's kind of the way they structure those things. So you're actually putting two mortgages on the property, and by doing so, you're eliminating the need for the resident to pay what's called PMI, or private mortgage insurance, which actually could be more in cost to the individual buying the property than just putting a 15% note on the property. Now, of course, you got to make sure all this stuff is legal in the area where your property is, because maybe your state limits the amount of leverage that you can put on a property. But considering this is going to be an owner-occupant, because the person living there wants to buy it, they're potentially going to be okay. So far, we know that the resident has 5% available for the down payment. When we come back from the break, I'm going to hit you with the next part of the statement, because we have to break this down. We have to understand what's going on in this owner's mind. Stick around.
Dale Wamsley explains how he found that speck of light that got him into the lifestyle.
I had a guy that used to come into the health club every day and work out for 4 hours a day, sit in the jacuzzi, swim, play racquetball, was happy, looked great, tan all the time. And one day I just asked him, what do you do for a living? And he said, Dale, I own real estate.
Well, do you own real estate? Register for our live online free workshop and find out how you can get all the things you want out of life with passive income. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. Brought to you by Lifestyles Unlimited. Lifestyles Unlimited Executive Vice President, Business Consultant, and Successful Real Estate Investor Lynn Murrow on the critical difference between those who succeed and those who fail.
Whether you have a small business, whether you are running a division of a large corporation, whether you're a CEO of a Fortune 100 company listening to us right now, or whether you work for somebody else, you have an area of responsibility and you are presented with a novel challenge by a novel virus that's going on right now. And the key to all of that is keeping your head up and looking for opportunity when what you want to do is curl up in a ball and go to sleep. And that is the critical difference between people who succeed right now and people who fail.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our business and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. So we're talking about a situation, and this is a situation that you might run into when you become a real estate investor. As a matter of fact, it's a situation that many of our members at Lifestyles Unlimited have the opportunity to deal with. And to be honest with you, I think it's a great opportunity when one of the residents in your single family homes declares that they're interested in buying a house because they want to enjoy home ownership. And they come to you and say, you know, I've been living here for a little while and I kind of like it. I like the house. I like the neighborhood. I don't want to pull my kids out of school. I don't want to, you know, rent the moving van. I don't want to go through the hassle of going and finding another place to live. You know, I'm pretty comfortable here. So from time to time, our residents will have a conversation with us to say, I'd like to buy it. And I actually have that particular situation going on right now with one of my rental properties. I'm not going to get into that right now because I'm going to talk to you about what was posted on this website. So just to reflect back, there was a question that was raised by somebody that owns a single family home somewhere in the United States. We don't know where because they didn't indicate that. And that the resident living in that house is qualified to buy a home. In other words, they're qualified to get a loan for an amount greater than what this particular house that they're living in would sell for. To me, that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Yeah, because even though your resident may qualify from you in order to utilize the house, to rent the house from you, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have the wherewithal to qualify for a purchase of a home. Yeah, because lenders go a little bit deeper than we go when we're doing credit reviews and things like that. Yeah, it has to do with the whole underwriting process and the fact that these loans are generally regulated, and as a result of that, there are certain conditions that have to be met. We as landlords or owners of property, we don't necessarily take that deep of a dive when we're screening our residents. Okay, so let's get back to this. Here's the thing that this person brings up that concerns them. My worry is that the appraisal will come back short, which he won't be able to cover. In other words, his concern is he wants to sell it for a certain price point. He thinks his home is worth a certain price point. Now, based on that statement right there, we don't know if the buyer is agreeing to that price point, but it kind of alludes to that, right? It kind of alludes to the fact that maybe it does. But the owner's concern is that he may be selling it for more than what the market will bear. Because keep in mind, when you consider valuations for single family homes, the valuation is agreed to between the buyer and seller. But if you're going to put a mortgage on the property, that lender gets a piece of the action because they want to make sure that the buyer isn't over leveraging the property for what the property is really worth. So in other words, if the house was worth $200,000, or let's just say $200,000 is the agreed upon price. That's a nice, easy number to work with. And let's say the appraisal comes in for $180,000. The lender is going to base the mortgage that they, or mortgage products that they're going to offer based off the reality that that type of home in that type of subdivision in this particular market is really only worth $180,000. So they will discount the amount of money that they will apply to the loan. So this guy is basically saying, well, I'm staying firm on my price. I know it's worth $200,000. But in the back of his mind, he's concerned that he cannot get an appraisal at $200,000. And his initial thought is, well, that's the buyer's problem. That's my resident's problem. So in other words, if it only appraises for $180,000, not only does the resident have to come up with whatever the required down payment is for the loan product that they're working on, they're also going to have to make up that delta between the $200,000 that the seller thinks the property is worth and the $180,000 that the appraiser thinks the property is worth. Now, if I was the buyer, or if I was the resident in the situation and the seller could not produce a $200,000 appraisal for the property, I'm just going to keep renting and consider buying something somewhere else, because why would I overpay for the property? What sense is it to overpay for the property? I mean, that's kind of the mindset of what's going on in the buyer's mind. Okay. So right there, we already know that the seller's probably got some deliberate price in mind. And that price isn't even quantified So in other words, we don't know if this person went out and looked at comps. In other words, what has sold in the particular area over the last, say, 6 to 9 months that are within a certain square footage, a style of home, within a certain location. I mean, that's how we generate comps. Now, the way we do that is we work with our real estate professionals because they've got the majority of that information at their fingertips. Now, you could go out and hire an appraiser as a seller and do the same thing. But it's cheaper to get an understanding of what the products are selling for. Now, this person makes one more statement and they say, my house is one of the nicest in the neighborhood. Okay, that's a good thing. That really is a good thing. And much poorer quality homes are selling in days. Okay, so what he's pointing out there is that there are inferior assets in this neighborhood. This guy's obviously taking care of his property. It's a nice property. Maybe when he bought the property, I'm assuming it's a he, when they bought the property, maybe they went in and did things the way we do it at Lifestyles Unlimited. Maybe they fixed that property up to new or like new condition, and in which case they increased the value of the property. But the concern is that there are, you know, we'll just call them junky properties in that neighborhood that are selling. Well, you have to ask yourself, who's buying those properties? If they're in really bad shape, if they're really wholesale prices, then they're probably being bought by investors who will go in and do what we do at Lifestyles Unlimited, fix it up, put it back on the market for someone to rent out. Or maybe it's being bought by a flipper. Now, I don't consider flippers to be investors, and neither does the IRS. When you consider all the taxes that are levied on the profits that a flipper makes, you'll understand why I think that way. But maybe they're buying it wholesale. They're going to do the same things that we would do normally, fix it all up. But because they're flipping the property, maybe they're not so concerned about fixing everything that could go wrong in the next 5 years. They're only going to take care of the immediate needs, and then they're going to sell it at retail prices. So you kind of have to know what's going on in the marketplace. And an appraiser is going to look at like-kind properties. We come back from the break. I'm going to hit you with some of the responses to the question that was posed. You're going to go, what?
Del Wamsley talks about understanding the system.
A guy told me the other day on the radio, he says, you know, I understand the system. They let the stock market go up to feed our ego, to think we're getting somewhere, and then they crash it on us and take it all away. So now we're stuck. He says, I've lived through two of those cycles, so he started investing in real estate to get away from the cycle.
Are you ready to break the cycle? Start investing in real estate today. Find out how. Join Lifestyles Unlimited. Start with our live online free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Warning, listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. Zig Ziglar said, you can get anything you want if you help enough other people get what they want. And that is a principle that we embrace in our culture at Lifestyles Unlimited. We believe that with what we do with real estate investing, we help a lot of people. We do. We provide some great quality workforce housing that if we didn't provide it, it wouldn't be out there in the marketplace. I firmly believe that because I've seen it. I've seen what our members do. So what we're talking about on today's show is a post that was put on one of these websites talking about, my resident wants to buy my property. So this individual is thinking about selling the property. Now, they don't give us a ton of information, but I can surmise from what is here that they have some concerns. First of all, they may not be very sophisticated. In other words, they may not understand the entire selling process. And that's a problem. That's why I think you need to get a qualified education if you're planning to be involved with real estate investing. And if you're already investing right now and you're getting your advice from these boards, maybe you need to get into Lifestyles Unlimited and let us teach you what right looks like, because you would never ask a question like this. You would understand the possible remedies for the situation you're in. Let's get into some of these answers. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, some of these answers are abusive. And I don't mean abusive in the fact that they're being, you know, mean-spirited and writing dirty words in their responses. No, they're abusive in the fact that they are pro-property owner and abuse the resident. And I think that's stupid. I think that's absolutely stupid. Because now let's take a step back. If you own this rental property and you have a business relationship with that person that lives in there, and you maintain that property, you've given them a wonderful place to live, and they're appreciative of that. And the way they show their appreciation is they pay their monthly rent on time, or at the worst case scenario, they at least contact you and say, hey, you know what? Johnny got sick, had to go to the ER, unexpected bill. It's going to back me up a couple days. Are you okay with that? And you can make an informed decision to work with that person. And they've been taking care of your property. They're enjoying living in that property. Why would you want to Mickey Mouse around with that? Why would you all of a sudden want to be a jerk? I don't understand it. But okay, let me tell you what people are saying out there. So there's one person that says, if you're in a hot market like most of the U.S. is in right now, then it's really not your concern if your tenant can close. What? That is stupid. Okay, let me finish up. Take some earnest money and make it contingent on them getting financing and covering any appraisal gap. Yeah. So in other words, put your resident in a no-win situation so that just in case you sell it for that $200,000 price, but it only appraises at $180,000, you're basically telling that resident that they need to come to the table with an additional $20,000 in cash, which you know they don't have because they only have like up to 5% down to cover this. And make sure they put earnest money up, so set them up for failure so that when they can't do what you want them to do, you keep the $2,000 earnest money deposit. How mean-spirited is that? But that's the kind of advice this person rendered. This is exactly the advice this person rendered. Bad advice. Okay, you want another one? Here's another one. You can do seller financing through a real estate attorney. Okay, so what? Then sell the note on the secondary market. Really? Well, yeah, you can sell a note on the secondary market. The higher the percentage, what does this person say? The higher the percent, the higher price point you can sell it, and you can buy or build credit. This thing makes absolutely no sense. Oh, and there's no appraisal necessary. So basically what this person is saying, okay, let's do it this way. Have your buyer, your resident, pay that $200,000 price. You act as the bank. That's right. You become the bank. And you let them put, say, 5% down. So what is that? 10 grand? And now you're going to put a note on that property for $190,000. Here's your problem. You are over leveraged as a note holder. The property is only worth $180,000. Does that make sense? Oh, and here's the other thing. Instead of getting your equity out of the property, you have committed all of your equity to that note. Yeah, because now you're making money based off whatever the terms and conditions of that note are. Yeah. And how'd you sell the property? How'd you sell it? Are you trying to do a 1031 exchange and move the money into follow-on properties? Yeah, kind of hard to do when you have all your money tied up in a note. As a matter of fact, you can't do it. You could, but you're only going to move $10,000 over. You could do a partial 1031, but you're really eliminating the effectiveness of the 1031. So be prepared for capital gains and be prepared for depreciation recapture. And if you don't have other assets providing you depreciation write-offs, or you haven't built up a big bank of those things, be prepared to pay taxes. Because you've now made a decision to move from being a real estate investor into a note holder. And yeah, you can turn around, you can sell that note on the secondary market. But the people that buy those notes, they don't pay face value. They're going to apply some type of discount rate. So let's say it's a $190,000 note. Maybe they're willing to give you $170,000 to walk away from it. See, they're going to make their money based on the fact that they're buying it for less than the face value. They may operate that note for a while, and then they may sell it down the road. And effectively, what you just did is you effectively just gave up $20,000 on that note discount, which, to be honest with you, you should have just gone and went for a sales price of $180,000 if that's all that property would appraise for, and just be done with it, sold the property. But here's the other question I have for this person that's interested in selling the property. What does that do for their long-term plan? What does that do for their goals and objectives? What does that particular house do for them right now? Is it providing them a certain amount of cash flow? And did they have a certain hold period on that property? A hold period where they were going to hold it for, say, 3, maybe 5 years, and then possibly sell it at that time period. Now, just because the resident says, hey, I want to buy it, doesn't mean you have to sell it. I have a resident right now saying, I want to buy this house. And I have said, I will sell you this house. And they've said, when? And I said, probably not for another 2 years. And they said, okay, because I'm not interested in selling that property. I've got a specific hold in mind for this property. I expect this property to produce a certain amount of cash flow, and I expect this property to go up in value over time. And I've got a certain strike point I'm looking for the sale of the property. Now, if it works out for my resident when I'm ready to sell, cool. But in the meantime, she has got a wonderful place to live. Hey, we come back from the break. I'm going to explain to you how I would do it, how I would sell this property and make it win-win. Stick around.
Here's Lifestyles Unlimited founder and CEO, self-made multimillionaire, and national radio host, Del Walmsley, on the effective way to run a business.
There are people that run their businesses on a shoestring. If you own an apartment complex and you have no cash, that's not a very effective way to run a business. My businesses, each and every one of them, have cash savings. In other words, we can make no money or make very little money. We'd still survive. For those of you that haven't thought it through that far and you don't have any cash savings, let's get you in here and get you educated on how to save what you already own. The mom and pop businesses are going to take a major hit. If you've been running your business that way, you need to get into Lifestyles right now and learn how to operate your business the right way.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. So we're talking about owning a residential income-producing property as an investor, and your resident comes to you and says, you know, I've been thinking, I want to buy a house, but I really like where I live. Would you be willing to sell the property to me? See, what you have right now is an opportunity. You have an opportunity to put a deal together that could benefit both of you. But really what it boils down to is where are you at in your investing strategy? Has that asset done for you what you intended it to do? Or does this asset give you now an opportunity to do something else that may benefit you? I mean, you got to think about that. You also need to be very clear in your mind that when you have somebody who has a genuine interest in buying your property, regardless of whether it's a seller's market or a buyer's market, don't mess around with them. Don't screw with them. Don't try and take advantage of them. See, you make your money in real estate investing when you buy the asset. That's why we keep telling you, you have to buy wholesale, renovate the property, capture equity in the property, because it positions you financially in a much better place than if you just went out and bought something retail price. maybe new construction or something that somebody who's flipping properties, you know, fixed up. You're not capturing any equity in there. So there's no additional equity for you to garner. And where that equity comes in is that equity goes right to your bottom line. It's part of your net worth. It's part of what makes you wealthy. And the more of these things you have, the wealthier you become. And there's two ways to tap into that equity. You either sell the property, pay the cost of sale, deal with the taxes if you choose to, or do a 1031 exchange and defer those taxes, or you do a cash out refinance on the property and you take money out of the property tax-free. And that type of transaction is tax-free because all you're doing is restructuring debt. You're making business relationships with a lender to loan you more money. The IRS doesn't care if you do that. They only care about taxes when you sell the property. So there was another dumb response on this site. And I'm just kind of like, man, I don't even know if I want to read this to you because I haven't given you a solution yet. But I've got a solution for you. I really do. And I'm going to tell you how I would go about doing this deal. So let's just get into it. Let me read you what this last person posted. And again, the people posting stuff here, you don't know what their experience is. You don't know what their education level is with regards to real estate investing. These people could be doing the school of hard knocks, you know, try something, get a result, try something else, get a different result. Or they, you know, they could be Lifestyles Unlimited members. We don't know. We don't know who any of these people are. So here's the other mean-spirited advice that came to this guy. I'm just going to read it to you because I think you need to know it's out there. So this guy says, assuming you're selling it to him for fair market value. Okay, so that's kind of what I've been talking about, right? What is the fair market value? And then you have to determine whether or not that's going to work for you. Have him submit a signed purchase offer that includes an appraisal waiver. Really? So basically what the person is advising is that sell it to him for fair market value, so whatever that is, and put an appraisal waiver in there so that if the appraisal doesn't come in where you want it to be, maybe the appraiser doesn't agree with your pricing strategy or structure, you're basically just going to make the resident come up with more money. Additionally, let him know that you will amend his lease to terminate on the close date. Use the actual date. So if you want to close the deal, let's say the 1st of June, picking a number out of the air, a date out of the air. And here's where it gets really mean-spirited. If he fails to close, you keep the earnest money. Maybe that was $1,000, maybe it's $200. I don't know what it was. And he has to move out and you get to list it on the open market. Wow. This person's given bad advice. The good advice is this. You've got a ready, willing, and able buyer. A buyer that knows the property better than you do. They have pre-qualified themselves. This buyer has qualified for a loan greater than necessary to buy your property, whatever you think that strike price is. Don't worry about the fact that they only have 5% for the down payment. That's all they need. Stop being greedy on this thing. When somebody wants to buy a property, there's a process they go through. Usually they go to a real estate agent. The real estate agent sits them down, talks about what your buying potential is, tries to get them pre-qualified, gets an idea of what they want. Of course, they want the Taj Mahal for, you know, a Motel 6 price. Bad analogy, but you know where I'm going. You have a ready, willing, and able buyer right there in the property. You're not going to spend money to market that property. You're not going to have to worry about trying to sell to other investors because you have a lease in place. Or unlike this knucklehead that said, oh, we'll just amend the lease so that if he doesn't perform, he's got to get out. And then you just go ahead and sell a vacant property. To me, that's abusing the person that's living there. Commissions, real estate commissions, can be one of the bigger costs associated with selling property. And the reason those costs are high is that real estate brokerages do spend a lot of money in marketing and other things, in errors and omissions insurance, yada, yada, yada. And the person you list with doesn't have access to every buyer that's out there. And sometimes buyers want to be represented by somebody other than your agent. So they'll go get a buyer's agent who will represent them, disclose that, And when you put the transaction together and it closes, you're going to pay your real estate commission. And then normally that commission is split between the brokerages, between the listing and the selling brokerages. That's how it works. So here's how I would sell the property. I'd first determine, do I want to sell? Because if I don't want to sell, I mean, why string along the resident? I mean, the resident that I have that wants to buy the one property that I might sell, I've told her I'm not ready to sell yet. She understands that. She's also in a lease, and her lease is due to renew in a little over 2 months. So, you know, we'll have that conversation. Do you want to renew or not? And I have told her I will sell the property to you when it's time, but it's not time for me to sell, and she's okay with that. So we'll see if she renews. I think she will, because she likes where she lives. So figure out what the value of that property is. Don't come up with, you know, I'm estimating the property's worth $200,000. I don't know. The person doesn't even list where the property's at. So figure out what fair market value is for that property. It's okay to contact one of your realtors and say, hey, I'm looking to sell. As a matter of fact, if you don't know how to put the contracts together, your real estate agent will probably do the whole thing for you for 1% to get the thing through escrow. And I'll tell you, that's cheap, especially if you don't know the mechanics of selling. And they'll make the thing work for you. So what I would do is this. I would go to the resident and I'd say, okay, look, property's worth $200,000. Are you willing to buy it for $200,000? If they say yes, right away, I already know that I'm saving $12,000 in real estate commissions because I can do this myself. I know how to do this myself. And let's say they want to do an FHA loan. So they're going to have to put 3.5% down. So they're going to need $7,000 to put down. And then what I'm going to tell them is this. Look, I've got $1,500 in a deposit I'm holding for you. I will return that deposit immediately to the escrow account. So that helps you get to that down payment and closing cost number. That puts their down payment requirement down to $5,500. And then I say, look, your rent would normally be due on the first of the month. And you're already going to have that. So use that $1,500 to go towards that first month's payment or that down payment. So now they only need $4,000. On an FHA loan, a seller can contribute up to 6% of the closing costs. I can essentially turn this whole deal into a no money down deal for them, make it win-win for them, win-win for me. I'll actually make more money than if I tried to put it on the market as a vacant property. That's how you do it, by helping other people as well as helping yourself, because you're going to get what you want. If you want to find out this technique and other techniques that we teach, go to freeworkshoplivestream.com. And remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.